May it please the court, Peter Bensinger Jr. for Appellant Thayer. Here, the district court decision has set a dangerous precedent. It is being cited for the proposition that one looks solely to the indication section of the FDA-approved label to determine whether a method of use patent claim can be asserted in Hatch-Waxman litigation. And this is legal error. Under this court's decisions, under the FDA regulations implementing Hatch-Waxman, and the FDA's practice in this case, the infringement analysis is not limited solely to review of the indication section. In addition, the district court also erred in applying the Rule 12c standard by not accepting Bayer's allegations as true and by not resolving all inferences in Bayer's favor.
Now, Bayer, I take your point that the district court did refer on several occasions to the indications and usage section, but I'm wondering whether it's fair to characterize the district court as having relied exclusively on the indications and usage section of the FDA approved label. I'm looking at page 10 of the district court's opinion, which the district court says none of these arguments refutes, and I quote, undisputed evidence, including the indications and usage section of the essence FDA approved label and the FDA's letter approving Bayer's NDA claim for the essence. The essence is only FDA approved, produces an oral contraceptive. Isn't it fair to say, from that language at least, that the court was accepting indications and usage as one of the indications of approval and not the exclusive source of approval?
It's true that the district court also referred to the FDA approval letter, but effectively what the district court did was treat the approval letter as related solely to indications, and that was an error. Let me quote from the approval letter.
Well, the court, to be fair to the court said undisputed evidence, including the indications and usage and the label. And it's not a closed set. He says, including A and B, means there could be other things as well. It doesn't refer to them. But
go ahead. Well, it's significant in this case that the approval letter says the drug product is safe and effective for use as recommended in the agreed upon and closed labeling text. And here we have factual evidence that the FDA approved the patented method, and the district court, through the legal rule it created, avoided this factual evidence as well as the FDA's interpretation of its own regulation.
What is the factual evidence that the FDA approved the patented method? I thought that's the issue before us.
Well, the issue here is whether the FDA approved the method of inducing simultaneously three pharmacological effects. The imperceptive effect, the anti-mineralocorticoid effect, which is the water retention, and the anti-androgenic effect, which is the anti-testosterone.
Just be helpful to me, because I'm not as smart as you are. Can we say AM and AA?
Absolutely.
That's good. I can't pronounce all those big words. So we're going to talk about three effects, concentration, AM, and AA.
Correct.
Right? That's clearly what was in the method that was patented.
Correct.
And the argument seems to be, did the approval of the FDA for the use of the drug in certain activities include all three of those or just the contraception? Do I understand the issue?
I think you do, and I think it's clear that the FDA-approved label describes all three effects. That's undisputed.
That's undisputed. And the question is, when the FDA approves the undisputed label, does that mean that they approve all three of those activities, or just the one that's contained in the indications of use restraint? And that was the opening dialogue you had with Judge Bryson. The puzzle I have, or I have a lot of puzzles, the one puzzle I have is section 314.53(c)(2)(i), you'll forgive me, says that the NDA filers have to identify, quote, the, quote, specific section of the proposed labeling that corresponds to the method of use claimed by the patent submitted.
Correct.
What did you all, in your submission in response to that, what did you say? I couldn't find that in your record.
The language you just read from the regulation is the current language, which was not applicable to Bayer's submission at the time of Orange Book listing. But the provision is very significant because a fundamental error the district court did here.
Your answer to my question, you all didn't file a response to that because it wasn't applicable at the time.
Correct.
So we don't know what Bayer thought it was submitted.
Bayer didn't have to point to a specific section in the label at the time Bayer submitted its Orange Book application.
Did you have to put a code number on it?
The FDA assigned a use code in that instance. What's significant, however,
use code is only for contraception.
That's correct. Okay. Here, what's significant is the district court did not give deference under the Supreme Court Chevron case to the FDA regulations implementing Hatch-Waxman, the FDA's own interpretation of how to read the statute. The language just read states, identify with specificity the section of the approved labeling that corresponds to the method of use claim. That indicates that one can look outside of the indication section in order to find the FDA-approved use of the method. Here, the description is in the clinical pharmacology section, as well as the indication section.
Had that been done, had that regulation been in effect at the time Bayer filed for the Orange Book, presumably we wouldn't be having this discussion. Is that correct?
Had the language been operable,
yeah,
Bayer would have described the indication section, which covers the contraceptive effect, and the clinical pharmacology section, which describes the two attendant pharmacological effects that go with the contraceptive effect.
There's no evidence to support that. That's your argument, that Bayer would have done that.
That's true. It's not in the record.
It's not.
It's a hypothetical.
Yeah. Okay.
But what's significant here is the patent statute itself does not define the word use for purposes of Hatch-Waxman litigation. The statute doesn't say you cannot look anywhere but the indication section. And under Chevron, the district court should have deferred to the FDA agency interpretation of an ambiguous statute where Congress empowers the agency to implement the statutory scheme. And here Congress empowered the FDA to implement Hatch-Waxman. The FDA implemented the regulation 21 CFR 314.53B from which we just read. But the language operative at the time was, quote, for patents that claim a method of use, the applicant shall submit information only on those patents that claim indications or other conditions of use that are described in the pending or approved application. So the regulations did not refer solely to the indications. They refer to other conditions of use, which here are the attending pharmacological effects that occur when you administer drosperinone.
I don't want to cut you off, but you're in the middle of your discussion at this point. But when you get to the end of that point, the point you're discussing, I want to ask a more basic question that's troubling me. Go ahead and finish it.
To finish this point, the regulations do not limit inquiry to the indications section only. Instead, they indicate one can look to the entirety of the label to find support for the FDA-approved method. In fact, the FDA issued written commentary on this regulation, and it stated that if the FDA had already approved the NDA, which was the case here, then, quote, the patent must claim a method of use that is in the labeling of the approved NDA. That's at 59 Federal Register 50363. So we have the FDA's interpretation that you can rely upon parts of the label other than the indication section to find an approved use. Here, there's no question drospirenone has the pharmacological effects, the AMC and AA effects. That's undisputed. It's also undisputed. The FDA approved label describes those effects. It's also undisputed that the patent claim covers the indication, contraception, as well as the two pharmacological effects. And in this respect, it's important to recognize that Warner-Lambert does not decide this case.
And now, are you finished with that point, or are you moving on to another point?
I'm going to discuss Warner-Lambert. Shall I take the question?
If you would,
please.
I take it that in light of our recent decision in another case involving this drug, that you have no protection, no valid patent protection for the drug itself, correct?
Correct.
All right. So is it also the case that you have no patent protection for the method of use of the drug for contraception, period?
Yes.
Okay. So if I take it then, if I prescribe the drug for someone who is not in need of the other aspects of the drug, I would not infringe. Correct.
Yes,
I
that is true.
This
the claim requires for a patient in need
thereof. A patient perceived to be in need of, usually to be diagnosed, but we'll set that question aside because I understand that's disputed. But in any case, perceived to be in need of AA and AB. AM, sorry. Okay. So the question is then, why is it problem when the method that is described in by the your opponent does not include the benefits of AM and AA?
That results from confusion between pharmacological effects and clinical outcomes.
Well, I guess where I'm going with this is this. If it is in fact perfectly permissible to employ the drug for contraceptive purposes, without regard to whether it has these other effects, then why is it that if somebody doesn't suggest that they be used for these other effects, that would constitute infringement?
Well, here you have a patented method that involves inducing these three effects simultaneously.
Well, but you're just saying that automatically induces the other two effects. You're prescribing for that purpose or not?
That's correct.
That would catch everyone who prescribes the drug, well, correct me if I'm wrong, would that not catch everybody who prescribes the drug for contraceptive purposes?
If they perceive there to be a need for these additional pharmacological effects, yes. But
no,
the pharmacological
question, the question being asked is, let's assume a doctor prescribes the drug, combined drug. And hypothetically, let's assume they're marketing. What is the name of the drug?
Yes.
They're marketing a generic version of yes, and the doctor prescribes it for contraception. But it has these additional, I suppose we can call them inherent qualities of dealing with AM and AA.
Additional pharmacological effects that attend the use of the drug.
Doesn't that infringe your patent?
It would, where the doctors are prescribing it.
Even if they don't know anything about AM or AA, they get a piece of literature that says, great for contraception, use generic Yasmin, and they prescribe it.
The claim limitation includes a women in need thereof, which the parties have agreed means perceived need, so there's a limitation that would come into play here. Before I conclude, I just want to note
that you can't conclude yet because we've got a lot more questions.
I reserved rebuttal time. Before I sit down, I just want to note that in the Warner-Lambert case, the issue was not whether or not the drug was FDA-approved. In that case, there was no question that the FDA had not approved the patented method. Here, it's different. Here, the FDA approved the indication of contraception as well as the two pharmacological effects, whereas in Warner-Lambert and Allergan, the approved use was entirely different from what the patent covered and claimed. And that's a fundamental distinction on this point.
What we're talking about here, I mean, this is perhaps a lucid, perhaps imprecise term, but we're talking about side effects, right? I mean, you say it's lucid, but these are consequences that are attendant to the principal function of the drug, at least as it is historically been viewed, correct?
I do not believe it's correct to refer to them as side effects.
Oh, okay. I thought you might push back on that. But fair enough. So let's say other effects to avoid the sort of nasty tone that comes with side effects. That sounds like necessarily bad. But not all side effects or other effects are bad. So are you suggesting that any time you have other effects that are described in the label, not in use in the indications, and not in a way that clearly indicates that the FDA has sanctioned these other effects as being therapeutically effective and safe, but nonetheless calls out these other effects, that constitutes FDA approval? And in answering that question, I'm giving an example. Suppose that you have something that says one effect of this drug is very good, it's a cure for pancreatic cancer, and it's a phenomenal drug. But it has the effect of raising blood pressure dramatically. Okay, I mean, raising blood pressure dramatically sounds pretty bad, but it's, given the benefits of the drug, the FDA is going to say, well, you know, we can live with that. And yeah, you know, there are perhaps some instances where somebody is in dire straits and needs to get their blood pressure up, and it will come, that having something that pops your blood pressure away is a good thing. The fact that that isn't a pure negative side effect, does that constitute FDA approval of that quality of the drug?
It does for the use that's approved. So here you're administering the drug for a particular purpose.
Yes, but that use is always present with the drug. And therefore, if somebody prescribes that drug purely for pancreatic cancer, are they infringing a method claim that says method for use of pancreatic cancer in a patient in need of or in combination with high blood pressure increase?
Yes, the law is that where you have an FDA-approved method, and you have an FDA-approved method that is covered by a patent, you can assert the patent. The premise of the question, though, is that the use is for pancreatic cancer, and that the patent covers the use for pancreatic cancer, along with the attending other effects, and the FDA has approved use of the drug for pancreatic cancer with the attending effects.
The question is, does that constitute FDA approval? That's where we're using the term. The FDA, what my question comes down to basically is this. Is it your position that FDA doesn't approve, for example, I suppose, an other effect of this causes heart attacks and strokes in some small but non-negligible number of people? That's not approval. We agree of that effect, because those are not beneficial effects with anybody, presumably. Okay, except Dr. Gaborian. All right. So if you say that the drug might have the other effects might be helpful in some cases, does that suddenly convert FDA disclosure of and willingness to tolerate other effects into approval?
Each case you have to look at based on the individual facts. Depends on the specific facts of the case. What we know is that the FDA was aware of the pharmacological effects, knew the clinical pharmacology section of the label,
approved advertisements specifically promoting the pharmacological effects, which the FDA would not have permitted if those effects had been unapproved or off-label. You could only advertise approved uses of the drug. So here, the key fact is you have an indication that's approved, contraception, with attending pharmacological effects, which are known to the FDA, approved by the FDA, in the FDA label because they are important to prescribers. And therefore, when you prescribe the drug for oral contraception with these effects for a woman in need thereof, you infringe the method patent.
Your short answer to this question is that might have been for purposes of infringement under paragraph 4 claims under Hatch-Waxman, the answer is
yes.
Thank you. That might have been your answer to this question, because that's really the issue, isn't it?
It is.
Now, with the presiding judge's permission, I have one short question.
Okay.
I look over in that far corner of the room, if you'll take a look over there. You see the 600-pound gorilla in that corner? That's the FDA. The only real question in this case, the underlying question, is what did the FDA approve? Why isn't the FDA here? Why isn't a party to this litigation?
The FDA is not a party to litigation because we have a patent that Hatch-Waxman permits us to assert under these circumstances.
The argument between you two is purely what is it the FDA approved? Why don't we ask the FDA that very question?
Well, the question is whether one can rely upon description in the clinical pharmacology section to support FDA approval of the use. We also have factual testimony here from the director of the FDA division that actually approved the asthma, and the district court disregarded that testimony, finding it not credible, because the director said, we reviewed this application, and we approve this method, the pharmacological effects along with oral contraception. So the answer is we don't need the FDA. We have their implementing regulations that we've discussed. We have FDA approval of ads affirmatively promoting the method, which we've discussed. And we finally have the director of the division who attested they approved it. On this basis, the district court erred applying the Rule 12 fee standard and should have resolved the factual inferences in Bayer's favor, and should have allowed the case to go forward. I'd be grateful for the shortest of rebuttal time.
We're going to say very rebuttal time. We had some difficult questions to ask. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you.
Yes, good morning, Your Honor. Mark Jansen for Watson Laboratories, and Joseph Hines is here for Sandoz, and Christopher Griffith representing Lupin. I'm going to be arguing for the appellees. May it please the court. This case, in my view, is essentially Bayer taking a patent that does not cover oral contraceptives and applying it to an oral contraceptive. There is one use code at issue in this case. It's the use code for oral contraception. That is all that the asthma is approved for, oral contraception. There are potential side effects. One of those is anti-M. And as I think the court is aware, you can look to the record, the FDA required a bolded warning about that potential risk. The FDA cannot be said to have approved an anti-M effect. Nor, if you actually look at the label, and I think here the question is whether the court, this far below, what it looked at. And what should it look at? And there's a 600-pound gorilla in the back corner. I don't think that 600-pound gorilla needs to be here or be heard from, because what a permitting agency permits, whether it's a building permit, a liquor license or a drug permit from the FDA, is to look at the application that was made by the applicant, look at the permit that was issued, and that permit includes the letter of approval from the FDA and the labeling. The labeling provides information needed by doctors to make a determination as to how and whether to prescribe that particular drug. But it doesn't mean that the agency has approved the therapeutic effect. And that, yes.
Can I interrupt you for just a moment, if I may? I have the sense that you're really sort of trying to squeeze through a very small hole in the Hatch-Waxman statute. And let me explain what I mean by that. The issue is whether Bayer can bring an infringement suit against you under Hatch-Waxman, not under general infringement law, right?
Yes.
So the question here is, given the paragraph 4 certification, can Bayer sue you under the statute? And your answer is no, because when we sell Yasmin, which is what we want to do in its generic form, we really aren't infringing their patent, even though we're selling exactly the same patented method for that particular drug. We're going to sell the same drug for that purpose. And the reason is because it's not clear, at least, or your argument is clear from the record, that the Orange Book listing is only for contraception.
That's not the... Yeah, I understand your question. I'd be happy to answer it.
Yeah, would you? Because that
yes.
seems to me to be where you are. They're arguing, no, it's not just for contraception. The Orange Book listing covers the whole method, including the what you're now calling side effects, what you could call the inherent properties of this combination drug. But it seems to me you're going to do exactly the same thing they're doing with their drug. Why? Why is that? What is this whole argument about?
No, I don't. Well, let me back up a little bit. I think we have to look at the patent. What does this patent really cover? The patent is not an oral contraceptive patent. It's been made very clear here that, number one, prospirenone is in the public domain. Prospirenone used for contraception is not patentable. It's not covered by a patent. That's the reason that Bayer got the patent. They had to get a patent for what essentially is hormone replacement therapy for older women, because the claim language requires treatment of women in premenopause, which are women essentially over 40. And
so your answer is for the combination, is that right?
What's that?
But the answer that's in debate with the Hatch-Waxman proceeding is for the combination, is it not?
Not at all. No. So just going back to the statute 271E to 2A. Allows the lawsuit to be brought earlier before we get FDA approval. But there's still to be a, once that, even if that's allowed, and that's a gatekeeping function governed by the Warner-Lambert case. This court in Warner-Lambert said that in connection with 270E2A, which allows this early lawsuit, it's limited to controlling use patents for patents that claim an approved use of a drug. So, Bayer has to show, or it has to be shown by somebody, that the FDA has approved the use in that patent. As Bayer, that's the question before the district court judge. I think the district court judge did a very good job of answering that question. But that's a gatekeeping function. And just as in Warner Lambert, there were multiple uses for the drug at issue, the approved use was for treatment that the relevant patent had expired. The plaintiff had another patent which covered other effects which necessarily occurred, but that was not an approved use. Therefore, under Warner Lambert and under 271E2, that patent holder could not bring the case. They could bring the case after Watson and Sandoz and Luke and go to market. There can still be a traditional lawsuit brought, but it's going to fail. 652 patent is not infringed. As an answer to Judge Bryson's question, a counsel candidly admitted, unless a doctor is prescribing to an older woman in premenopause and menopause for three purposes, three therapeutic purposes. There cannot be infringement. This requires treatment of a patient in need thereof. So that means a doctor has to say, you need anti-A, you need anti-M, and you need contraception.
So you're
and therefore, I'm going to prescribe it. That's the only doctor that would directly infringe.
You're arguing if you pick one of those three and say, I want to market their drug for only one of the three, I can do that without Hatch-Waxman infringement.
First of all, it's a hypothetical. It's not going to happen because Watson is a generic, or any of the appellees here, only market according to the label. And they're forbidden, just as Bayer is forbidden from marketing the anti-M or anti-A properties, because those are not approved uses. And that's why Bayer, the FDA sent Bayer a letter accusing it of improper advertising. I think take a look at it would be A0940. It's a letter.
If I heard Mr. Benson, that it is improved.
Approved. He's absolutely incorrect about that. Let me just say the label.
For marketing on their product. You're saying they can't market that product.
Bayer can market, can advertise a product. They cannot advertise anti-M or anti-A properties because those are not approved. The FDA has not approved those uses. The court looked at what's been approved. In order to get approval of a therapeutic effect, a therapeutic effect, which is what this patent covers, there has to be clinical studies done. There has to be a showing to the agency's satisfaction that the drug is safe and effective for the purposes as to which approval is sought. Bayer only sought approval for contraception. You can simply look at their application. But if you look at the letter that was sent by the department based on the advertising subsequently at 940, you'll see that the bottom of 940, the agency reiterates its concern that drospirenone has got these anti-M properties, which means that it can work against the body's normal mechanism for regulating salt and water balance, a situation that can lead to hyperkalemia in high-risk patients, resulting in potentially serious heart and health problems. This additional risk is described in bolded warning. I mean, if that doesn't say that the agency did not approve that use, I don't know what does, but on the next page, this is page 940 and 941. And this was basically Joint Appendix 940 and 941. In 941, the FDA has not aware of any substantial evidence of substantial clinical experience demonstrating that the Viagra is superior to other combined oral contraceptives, or that drospirenone and Viagra is clinically beneficial. On the contrary, FDA is aware of the added clinical risks associated with drospirenone as communicated in the warnings and bolded label warning. If we go to the approval letter itself, you'll see, and this is at page 307, this is the critical evidence which really constitutes what did the agency approve. This new drug application, and this is at A307, this new drug application provides for the use of Viagra 28 tablets for oral contraception. Oral contraception only. That's the only approval that was sought. That's the only approval that was provided. And there's a label that was approved with it. The label is for information purposes, and it does refer to clinical pharmacology. And I would point out to the court that while we're talking here about alleged approved effects, the agency in the label never used the word effects. It referred to the fact that drospirenone is a spironolactone analog. I'm at page 312, which is the approved label for the clinical pharmacology. Drospirenone is a spironolactone analog with anti-mineralocorticoid activity. Okay. Preclinical studies in animals have also shown that drospirenone has anti-androgenic activity. So the FDA was careful not to use the word effects, number one. But number two, and what's more important, is that those effects were not approved as a therapeutic treatment or therapeutic effect. you know, these are things that maybe happen in the body, according to some animal studies. And so this information is provided for information purposes only. I think one thing that I would like to point out to the court, which was not cited at length, or maybe it's cited at all, is to look at the red on the labeling. Because I think it sort of points out what's really happening with the label here is that it's a provision of scientific information that is needed for the safe and effective use of the drug. And that's Title 21 CFR 201.568, general requirements. I just read from sub 1. Two, the labeling must be informative and accurate, and neither promotional in tone nor false or misleading. And really important, sub 3 is that. The labeling must be based, whenever possible, on data derived from human experience. No implied claims or suggestions of drug use may be made if there is inadequate evidence for safety or lack of substantial evidence of effectiveness. So just because it's in the label and a reference is made to the label, that's for a doctor to take into account when he makes a decision whether or not to prescribe that versus some other drug alternative to a patient. But it's not an approval of the therapeutic use, which was required to have the 652 patented method approved as required by Warner Lambert. So just to back up.
Come back for a minute to
yes.
something you said earlier. You said there still could be a separate infringement litigation after all the copyright stuff has gone away. Maybe we shouldn't go there because it's not before us, but it would help me understand. You're arguing no infringement of this patent because the patent does three things and you only want to do one. Do I understand that?
Well, let me back up a little bit because the context of the Hatch-Waxman Act in this particular statute, 271E sub 2, is a provision that creates a hypothetical act of infringement in the filing of the application. Nobody's gone to market. Nobody's actually engaged any kind of infringement. And the value of it to the drug companies is that they can file that lawsuit and they get a 30-month automatic stay of FDA approval without needing to get a preliminary injunction to show whether there's a likelihood of success on the merits of infringement or validity. So that obviously gives them 30 months of not having to worry about generic competition, which is the purpose of the Hatch-Waxman Act to promote generic competition. But filing a lawsuit is simply a procedural, essentially, it sort of creates standing to sue early. They still have to make out an actual claim, you know, of infringement. Now, in this case, of course, the generic company can't directly infringe a method of use patent. Only a doctor can infringe, and only if he prescribes to an older woman who is in perceived need of three simultaneous effects. So I bet the doctor, I have to be treating a woman who's 40 or over. I say, you need anti-M, you need anti-A, and you also need gestagenic or contraceptive effects. I'm going to prescribe this drug for that purpose. That's a direct infringement. Now, as we all know, I don't think it's essential that the court could take judicial notice, most women who take oral contraceptives are younger women. If you look at the label, in fact, there's a warning against women over 35. There might be adverse risk of taking oral contraceptives. So,
let me ask you a simple question that's still troubling me. If, in fact, the producers now, your clients, seek FDA approval of their product using the ANDA procedure, don't they need to rely on the prior information data that the FDA used in order to approve Janssen in the first place?
The generic companies will put the drug on the market. In the case of Watson, we have put the drug on the market because the 30-month stay has expired. We simply make it pursuant to the label. And
I'm sorry, because it was what it's already been approved.
And we have to use the same approved label, and that label will be the basis of the only claim that can be brought, to get back to your question, is a claim for induced infringement. Could we be liable for induced infringement? Now, this is one thing that we are not talking about here today at all. But and I think they've actually waived the argument. They can't win this case unless they can do two things. One, establish that the FDA approved all three uses, which it did not. Or, and then they have to say, moreover, your labeling instructs doctors to purpose. That label can in no way be considered to instruct doctors to use for all three purposes, because it simply provides, this is indicated for prevention of pregnancy. And oh, by the way, there's a serious risk of injury if your client may be susceptible to this anti-A, this anti-A effect. I used my time.
Do you have any more
questions? No. Okay. I think the bottom line here is the FDA has not approved this therapeutic effect. And just if you look at the Allergan case, this court decision in Allergan, there again, there were two patents, one of which covered an alleged so-called inherent effect, we could say inherent effect of protecting the eye nerve, but the only use that was approved was for the drug for reducing intraocular pressure. That patent had expired, and the court held rightly, this court held rightly, that there was no claim ability to bring an early Wolf lawsuit under 271 Houston 2. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The FDA knew drospirenone had anti-mineralocorticoid activity, and the pre-launch materials that were pre-cleared by the FDA, this is in the appendix at 826, tout the anti-mineralocorticoid activity and the anti-androgenic activity. So this is not a matter of simply a side effect. This is a drug that has these properties which the FDA reviewed and approved for use in oral contraception. This is appendix 904 and 905. And what's important to recognize is the pharmacological effect which is here described is not a therapeutic effect. The generics keep characterizing this as if it were a therapeutic outcome, and it's not. It's chemistry that happens within the body to block certain receptors. This is what makes it a pharmacological effect. The FDA knew this and required...
Well, I'm completely lost, because it's therapeutic, correct, in the sense that it treats a condition which a physician wishes to treat a patient who has a complaint.
That's not correct. It is a pharmacological effect that is of relevance to the doctors. It is not treating
because
a disease.
It's a therapeutic effect.
It has
beneficial effect. Let's stay away from the word therapeutic. It has potential beneficial effect for some patients or some doctors.
The doctor may perceive that it has a benefit. What the label says and what the FDA approves is administration of drospirenone for oral contraception, together with the anti-mineralocorticoid effect and anti-androgenic effect, pharmacologic. That's what the label says. That's the exact label that the generics wish to market, which will induce infringement. This is not a case where the doctor is prescribing the drug to treat acne or treat bloating. That would be a different case. Our case here, the indication is oral contraception. The script is written for oral contraception, and the pharmacological effects attend the oral contraception, and the FDA has approved that label and that use of the drug. It's straightforward under the court's authorities that where you have an approved label and a patent that covers the approved label, you can proceed in the district court with your infringement case. And that is what is going on here. That is the reason that this court should reverse and remand so that proceedings can continue before the district court. Otherwise, we create a situation where we cannot protect innovation on the ground that some pharmacological effect or some dosing regimen or something found outside of the indication section is no longer FDA approved, even though it's in the label. And the FDA implementing regulations say you can look to the label as a whole to find the approved use.
30 month, excuse me, freeze has expired?
Yes.
Then what's the litigation about?
The litigation now is before you as to whether we can proceed.
Yeah. And I'm reading. what's the point of proceeding with Patch Waxman at this point?
Well, at this point, we have a issue that we need to resolve so that we can continue to pursue our claims against all defendants. There are three.
Not all. But you're pursuing your claims under Patch Waxman.
Yes.
And if you win here, I mean, we should grant you complete everything you want. Then you get an injunction.
But we would proceed in the district court to allow proceedings to proceed and prove up our case.
All right.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.